Welcome, everybody, to Nerd Critic, a Real Contender production. This is our, third off-the-shelf episode, where we go into movies that you can pull off the shelf, and we dive into them from the dual perspective of Jordan CJ-ness.
I love that, Jordan CJ-ness. Yeah, the off the shelf, physically, literally, or digitally. There's lots of shelves of movies out there.
I guess not very many people pull a movie off the shelf physically very much anymore.
No, I still do sometimes.
It's in a sleeve. It's not even on a shelf. It's like it doesn't even apply to me.
Like an old school CD.
Yeah, exactly what is.
No, we have a shelf full of movies, and we will have more shelves full of movies. Here's my perspective on physical media now. Books and movies both. I mean, I love reading a physical book, and it's nice to throw in a disc every once in a while too. But the real reason you have books and movies in your home is so that you put them on shelves, and that when people come over, they can see what you love.
I mean,
it's a form of home decoration.
Yeah, you have an icebreaker just chilling there in your living room. That was the first thing I did when I came over to your house for the first time.
Yeah, you started perusing my movies.
Went to the movies and I was like, they got good taste. They really like Star Wars.
This is the intention.
Lord of the Rings.
This is the intention. Yes, absolutely.
So, works out.
All right. So anyway, today we are talking about Hellboys. The
two movies. Not,
yes.
There's not a different. I'm sure there's some movie out there called Hellboys.
It's probably not a movie that we'll ever talk about.
Probably not. This is Hellboy.
Hellboy 1 and 2 from respectively 2004 and 2008.
That's so wild. 15 years.
15 years ago.
Oh,
do you know when I saw Hellboy from 2004? 15 years ago.
I would assume so.
Yes.
So did you see it in the theater?
Full disclosure, I did see it in the theater.
Wow.
And here's the thing, and this is embarrassing because when we talked about doing this episode, I have not had time to watch these movies again. I haven't seen the first Hellboy since I saw it in the theaters 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I remember some of it.
Well,
I have seen Hellboy 2 a number of times since 2008.
That's so interesting. The exact opposite for me.
Really?
I have seen the first Hellboy a number of times. One time recently, and I've seen The Golden Army once on cable one time in high school.
Oh man. Okay.
So,
we'll
fill in each other's gaps.
Yes, yes, yeah. We will. And perhaps we'll have an important homework assignment at the end of the episode for each of us. Okay. So, first of all, we're just going to dive right in because we don't want to take our last episode was over an hour.
Yes.
It was about Captain Marvel, and I think every minute was earned.
And I still had so much to say.
Oh yeah, no, there was a lot we left on the table, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But CJ and I have mutually agreed that you probably don't want to listen to a lot of time of us talking about movies from 2004 and 2008 that were barely relevant even at the time. So let's dive right in.
There's actually a surprising potential relevance that you might not know with Hellboy. So Hellboy was originally a comic, and it was done by Dark Horse Comics.
Okay,
which is
know it was a comic. I don't know what Dark Horse is.
Yeah, most people don't. You have the big two, right? DC and Marvel. Dark Horse is like a very distant third.
Okay,
but they wrote books like 300 and Sin City.
Oh sure. Okay,
and they then license through. So they do. Like the Aliens, Star Wars, they do the comics for those.
Gotcha.
They've made movies like The Rocketeer, The Mask, Time Cop, Mystery Men, Alien vs. Predator, Sin City, 300, RIPD, and Hellboy. So they're like way more around than we realize.
Right, gotcha.
And the relevance is, have you heard of / seen The Umbrella Academy?
I have heard of it. I've seen previews for it on Netflix.
Okay.
I have not watched it.
It's kind of a hot commodity right now on Netflix. It's doing really well. The Umbrella Academy is a Dark Horse comic book. And so they kind of all live in this dark kind of dark comedy, twisted action kind of realm.
A little bit dystopic.
Yeah. And so that's Hellboy comes from that, from a very famous comic book writer. And there's a reason I think it's getting a reboot.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, I have to say, first of all, that I guess, you know what we'll talk about? We'll talk about that at the end. We'll talk about what's coming up at the end, like we usually do.
Sure.
So let's first talk about Hellboy from 2004.
Yes.
Stuff that we loved. I want to go first because I'll have less to say.
Okay.
So when I saw it in theaters in 2004, I didn't like it that much. And I think at the time, I was probably just...
Were you in high school?
I was okay. The very end of high school.
Okay.
But I was also just like starting to be like a little more... I was pretty critical. Like I went to see Scorpion King, like... To MST3K it. Like, I went with, like, a couple of friends so that we could just spend the whole 2 hours...
Laughing at it?
Trying to do our best to be, like, to just rip it to shreds and laugh our heads off. And it was very successful.
I feel like it's very revealing.
And we had a great time. And I literally called the entire climactic sequence shot to shot 15 minutes into the movie. Anyway. So, when I went to see Hellboy, I think that I was... expecting/hoping for a more serious, darker, movie with, like, I was expecting something different. Yeah. I wanted something different. And what it was goofy. And I don't remember it very well, but I remember being disappointed by it.
Yeah.
And by the end, just being like, I don't care at all what's happening anymore. And then leaving and being like, well, that was kind of a waste of time. That was my memory of Hellboy 1 and just being disappointed.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So the things I loved about it, are I think Ron Perlman is a magnificent son of a bitch, and I think that Guillermo del Toro is a hell of a director, pun intended.
Hey,
and so I had problems with the script or whatever, but like, I mean, yeah, it does a lot of things. It introduces a lot of things really well. Like, it's a really beautifully constructed movie. I mean, it's Guillermo, like, del Toro, who just doesn't know how to not make gorgeous, gorgeous crap.
Yeah.
Ron Perlman was such a cool cast. So those are the things that I absolutely loved about it, and really most of what I can remember.
Yeah. Well, so not to be revealing, but I was 13 when this movie came out.
Oh, boy.
And
I'm a little bit older than CJ. Not like a lot older.
I remember when I saw this movie, I thought two things. One, I actually loved it because I like the supernatural. Like, I was so not critical that, like, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was awesome to me.
Oh, man.
I loved that movie as a teenager.
I hated that movie.
It's a terrible movie. Oh, but boy. I love that kind of supernatural, kind of Frankenstein-y feel.
It gets you.
Yes, it gets me. And Hellboy somehow kind of like fell in there a little bit. And so I really liked it. I also remember having a massive crush on Liz.
Selma Blair? Oh, yeah. Well, I did too.
Yeah.
That's one. I should have pointed that out. That one of the other things I really liked about Hellboy was that Selma Blair was in it.
Yes.
I really like her.
Well, and it was, those are the two main things that I remember.
And her fire
hands. And she, like, there's a scene where she is having a bad dream and she, like, lights on fire and she's blue and everything goes up in flame around her.
Very cool.
So I watched this movie recently. When I say recently, let's say I watched it earlier today, but you don't need to know where I was earlier today. All right. So it's fine.
Props to you, my friend. Props to you.
And so I was watching it, and
the answer is at a close relative's funeral. Just kidding. Just kidding.
I was watching it, and I was pleasantly surprised at how well it holds up.
Oh, great.
I mean, Guillermo doesn't rely on special effects very often. There definitely are some, but he's a practical guy, right? Yeah. He does. And so the monsters were practical. And I was like surprised that when I looked up the year that it was released, it was 15 years ago, because I was having a whole lot of fun with it. I loved the character of Hellboy. Didn't always win. In fact, he like struggled to win.
Yeah.
He got beat up a lot.
Yep.
There is the, you never believed he was ever down. Mm-hmm. He was just like, he had unlimited resistance. But I like that he wasn't just that he wasn't the perfect hero, because obviously he's a demon, so he's not going to be perfect. But like, they showed several different kind of facets of the character within the physical confrontation. Because the physical confrontation of the movie wasn't, that was like the spectacle to get you to keep watching because it was fun.
Sure.
But the character's problems were emotional, mm-hmm. were like very personal. And those were the barriers he had to get over. Not once did you think he was ever going to lose a fight. But that was okay. And so I liked that. It's a really interesting character because I think that Guillermo del Toro kind of pulled out some depth that wasn't initially there. The comic book writer, Mike, I say Mignola, don't know if that's how you say it, but he wrote for Batman for a long time. He leaves Batman. He's like, I wanted to write my own comic. I wanted to create my own person and my own character in a world that I like. And I've read several interviews with him, and there seems to be like no deep-seated reason for him to create Hellboy. Other than it was cool art, and yeah. He's an illustrator, not a writer. And yeah. So it was like, I was like, hey, I was looking for like a cool quote to say about Hellboy.
If you look at Del Toro's like catalog of movies, like if you look at his work, a very strong theme that emerges is the identity of the other, or the people who are outcasts, the people who are different or weird or like monstrous. That's the big thing, right? Like
Shape of Water,
who is the monster, and why are they worth loving, or who are they? Like, what is the experience of being the monster?
Yeah.
And like, so that, I mean, he brought that in spades to the Hellboy property.
Yeah.
And it's really effective. We're going to talk about Hellboy 2 in a minute here, but like, yeah, I mean, it that definitely emerges in the first movie. And that's, you know, if it's anybody, like, it's easy to believe that that's Del Toro.
Yeah. And it's a very fitting property. I mean, the comic book creator, Mike, did not expect it to be long-term successful. And he's like, I don't think I did anything to make it long-term successful. Guillermo del Toro came to him and said, hey, I dig this property. Can I make it into a movie?
That's so awesome.
And he's like, sure. And then it took Guillermo del Toro 6 years to get the movie off the ground because it was a property that not a lot of people knew. Yeah. And it was called Hellboy. And so
Good luck getting your family out to see that.
Yeah,
one.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but it's an extremely fitting property for Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. It belongs in his pantheon of movies.
Right up there. I just think that Hellboy as a character, there's like a really unique, dark comedic sense in the movie. Some of the jokes did not land.
Yeah.
I remember as a teenager, they did. I loved it, but man, they were rough.
I think that's one of the issues I had with it. When I was a teenager, I was a snob. When it came to humor, I was a Simpsons guy. I was I just was like, you were not going to make me laugh with your dumb jokes. Yeah. Like it had to be really good. And like, I was not very generous with humor, in my teenage days.
Yeah. As I was watching this movie, recently, I always attach a word or a quality to the characters that I'm watching. Specifically with comic books, it's really easy because they are the epitome of that thing. Superman is hope. Wonder Woman's truth. Batman's justice. They all have Iron Man is intelligence. They all
Hellboy,
have things.
Hellboy is angst.
There's the question. And it's either a really good thing or a really bad thing that I couldn't find a word to attach to Hellboy as a character.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, it's a really good thing. Because if you can attach one word to a character to define them, what you have is a concept, not a character.
Sure.
Like the reason that, you know, we've seen so many different iterations of those characters that you just named is because they have to be supplied with things that are not necessarily native to their character, because their character has to be this essentially embodiment of one concept.
Sure.
So I think Hellboy is a very cool, as I should say, Hellboy as envisioned or incarnated by Guillermo del Toro is a very, very cool exploration of personhood.
Yeah.
And what it means to be to have different parts of yourself that are in very much in conflict,
yeah.
and to feel like you don't belong in a very real and tangible way. It's very, very fascinating yeah. exploration.
So that's kind of where I ended up in thinking about it, that, cause the character is incredibly intriguing to me. So in Hellboy 1, there is a scene where, the old doctor, do we have to say spoilers? I'm not saying it.
Okay. Spoilers.
The old doctor, the dad of the group, is murdered, mm-hmm. and Hellboy doesn't talk to anybody for 3 days. And Liz goes to Hellboy and says, hey, I'll go on this mission with you, you know, if you're still going, kind of to help you out. And that's all that he wanted. Hellboy is like nearly 100% focused on being with this woman that he loves. And he says, listen, I know that you said that you don't want us to be together. And I know that and obviously I'm paraphrasing. I know that I'm ugly and I have so many problems, but like, I love you and I want to be with you. And I realized in that moment that Hellboy is what a lot of us are, in that his fears of what's bad about himself is what is creating what's bad about himself, mm-hmm. right? She doesn't care that he's a big red demon, but that's what he thinks she cares about. Yeah. And so he's then self-conscious and tries to compensate for that. But the actions that he takes what to compensate he
does as a result of being insecure
is what she doesn't like, yes. right? And so it's this like, once I went down that hole of, I'm like, I'm taking this not incredibly successful movie that is about a demon, and I'm delayering it to apply to my life. And I think that signifies a good character and like a good movie. And so I'm excited. I like the character and I want to see more of the character. So I'm excited to see kind of where it goes.
Yeah.
I remember a big army in the second one, but like, that's about it. Okay. Where do they go with the character in the second one?
Okay, so Hellboy 2 is really cool. Hellboy 2 is...
Jordan, as he's talking, just decides to put a pen in his beard, which that's a new development. I don't think you could have done that a couple weeks ago.
You could just hang there almost.
And you just put it in. It wasn't even like you hooked it on. It was just like you went straight through. The pen is completely laying flat under your chin.
I did this in a work meeting earlier today. And nobody looked over while I was doing it. And so I did it again. And then nobody looked over again while I did it. And then before anyone looked over, I was like, I probably should take this out. To maintain some semblance of respect.
That was amazing. Just mid-sentence. Ooh, that was great.
Hellboy 2 is awesome. I really love Hellboy 2. And I haven't seen it for... I think the last time I saw it was just a couple years ago. I forced my wife to watch it with me. And I think she enjoyed it. I was a little more hyper-aware of its weaknesses, watching it with somebody new, like as an adult. with my wife.
And what year did you say this one came out?
2008. So it came out 4 years later. Yeah. Oh. So here's what happened, right? 2004, I went to see it in the theater and was disappointed. And then 4 years later, I'm in a totally different station of life. I'm in college. I'm studying film. Have all kinds of opinions about movies. Yeah. And Hellboy 2 starts coming out, and it's been, I mean, 4 years at that age is an eternity,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's huge.
So, like, I barely had a memory of the first movie, even at that point. But I was like, well, this preview looks pretty interesting. I think I'm going to go check it out. So I went and saw it, was blown away.
Hmm.
Was blown away. I have seen it probably half a dozen times since then.
Wow.
And have talked at length about it, because I think it's a really, really cool movie for a lot of really cool reasons. I'm going to talk about just a couple of things that I loved that I continue to love the most. There is an opening sequence that sort of established, there's that sort of flashback sequence of like, here's the history of how the Golden Army got created.
Yes.
That is all animated, and it is beautifully rendered. Just beautiful. Like, when I think about my top favorite like animated sequences in movies that are not animated. So like, I also would think of like the the Deathly Hallows.
That's totally what I thought
in
of.
Harry Potter, yes. Which is one of the most exquisite animated sequences in a movie for that I know of.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about the animated sequence in Hellboy 2, Golden Army. There's this animated sequence that starts things off and it is just so beautiful. So beautiful. Anyway, so there's that, which is a really good sort of start to the whole thing because the thing that makes Hellboy 2 so awesome and grand is that it's very much its own movie. Like, you don't actually have to have seen the first movie to see the second movie. It's very much its own movie. It's very much doing its own thing. And it's about what it's about is the cost of essentially, forgetting about or leaving behind or being at odds with a different version of reality or things that are old or things that don't make sense. So it really ends up being about science destroying fantasy. Like, that's what it really ends up being. Like, the idea of progress and modernity making or seeming to make irrelevant the world of fantasy or the world of superstition, right? So in Hellboy 2, we're introduced to this whole world of there are such a thing as elves. They're not elves, kind of like the Lord of the Rings kinds of elves. They're like different kind of elves, and fairies and sprites and monsters and all these things that sort of live underground. Like, literally, they have this alternate world that they inhabit, and that is being encroached upon by the sort of ever expanding human world that refuses to believe in their existence. And so. And so the conflict of the movie, I'm about to give away a lot of the stuff here, so I apologize. I think it's still worth seeing, even if you know what's going to happen. So the conflict of the movie is that there's an elven prince, Prince Nuada, and his twin sister, Princess Nuana. And he basically stages a coup against his father because his father's sort of conciliatory, just let's do our thing and we'll let the humans do their thing. And Prince Nuada is nope, not going to work. Mm. So he basically declares war on the human race, basically. And his sister gets dragged into it and she's not into it, but they're twins and they're sort of joined in this sort of spiritual way. Anyway, I'm getting way too far into the details here. The point is that Hellboy becomes this sort of semi-unwilling protector of the human race that almost entirely rejects him, right? So it's that story. It's the story of, it's the sort of Batman-esque story, yeah. Right? Where nobody wants you to be doing, nobody likes you. Go away. Get out of here. We'd kill you if we could, you know?
Yeah.
And yet he's the only one that can protect them against Prince Nuada and his sort of legion of fanciful creatures that's about to kill, that is in process of killing lots and lots of people. So, and Princess Nuada's objective is to gain control of the Golden Army, which is this essentially invincible army made of golden metal.
Yeah.
So they're basically robots that have been constructed by magic. And then they can't die. And so you can destroy it. You can try to fight them or whatever, but then they'll just reassemble themselves and keep at you. Mm-hmm. His objective is to gain control of that army, because if he can gain control of that army, then he can wipe out all of humans because they have nothing that can to stop this golden army. Anyway, it's all very visually amazing. But the thing that I love about it is how deeply sympathetic Prince Nuada is as a villain. Mm. He might be the most sympathetic antagonist of that year, or maybe many other years, because you totally understand why he's doing what he does. He's 100% badass, so he's really, really cool and in command and not silly at all. And and the way that he treats everybody is so sort of elegant and respectful, even though he's terrifying and dangerous. It's so cool. Anyway, at the very end, when he's defeated, spoiler alert, although it's Hellboy, so you don't expect the villain to win. Anyway, he gets killed in a way that I won't reveal, because it's a nice twist. And when he's dying, he says, this is the line. He says, "We die and the world will be poorer for it." And it is so beautiful and it is so tragic that at the end you can't feel victorious that he's been killed because what he was fighting for and what he stood for like had real merit, and so the whole movie has that kind of like that conflict, and then there's this scene that I have to call out, and then I'll stop my kind of like long
synopsis.
Digressive synopsis. Basically, there's this scene that just blows me away every time I can't even 100% contextualize it within the movie, but there's basically kind of an aside where at one point, Hellboy's been stabbed with a magic dagger, basically. And it's kind of like one of those daggers from Lord of the Rings where like a shard kind of stays in you and they can't pull it. Like when they try to pull it out, it like goes deeper in and it's like, it'll kill him if they try to pull it out. And it's like slowly killing him anyway. And so they go to basically this, like, I want to say like the Angel of Death or something. It's this crazy, very, very Guillermo del Toro creature.
Totally.
Like super wild looking, frightening creature. Yeah. With this like fan head and no eyes and just
black wings with eyes on them.
Oh my gosh. He's such a cool creature. Anyway, and there's this longish scene where Liz is trying to save Hellboy's life by bringing him to this creature. And this creature basically is like has this conversation with her and says, and shows her basically tries to convince her that if Hellboy lives, he will eventually become the bringer of the apocalypse.
Mm.
Like he will eventually destroy the world. Like he will eventually help destroy the world. And so he says, you have a choice to make. Do you choose the world or do you choose him? And she just doesn't even hesitate. She says him. Mm. And then he like does this really cool thing and saves Hellboy's life. And then Hellboy wakes up and he's like, and I think that's actually at the end of the movie. I think that's like the end of the movie. And then they're like, as they're leaving, there's this amazing freeze frame. I also won't ruin. You should just go see the movie. It's so cool.
I need to apparently rewatch this movie. I remember bits and pieces, but
that scene is so, so gorgeous. It's like one of those like top shelf Guillermo del Toro scenes, you know, mm-hmm. just beautiful stuff. And Hellboy 2 to me was this bizarrely successful movie that I just really, really loved enough to watch like a bunch of times after.
Well, and it's not often that you get a sequel that performs better than the first movie.
Yeah.
And
this one did.
It did. And definitely critically it did. And so,
yeah, I mean, it has an impossibly high score on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, it was like people and critics loved this movie.
For the reasons I
have described. I think still some of the humor doesn't quite land, although I believe it does land better than the first movie, but I have to go back and verify.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely like a little bit of corniness. It moves a little bit slowly. Del Toro isn't great at action movies.
Yeah.
He's not great at, although there's some really impressive sequences, as a whole, the movie isn't paced wonderfully, so that there's some parts where you kind of feel like it's dragging a little bit.
Sure.
It's taking its time and you're just like, ugh. Anyway, Seth MacFarlane has a fantastic role that people you wouldn't notice because he's just the voice of a character and it's pretty awesome. Anyway, so there's a lot to love about Hellboy 2. A lot to love about it.
That is cool. I am really excited to see where Hellboy goes. David Harbour as Hellboy. It was like I remember when I heard that casting. Ron Perlman's hard to pass.
It's hard to beat Ron Perlman.
But when they said David Harbour as Hellboy, I was like, oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Makes a whole lot of sense.
A, better actor than Ron Perlman.
Absolutely.
B, definitely has the look.
Definitely has the look.
And I think he fits. I think he fits the part. I think he's a really good choice.
And I think, especially like the personality of I'm gonna make it look like I don't give a crap, but then I'm actually giving
a crap.
Yeah. Yes. Which is the sheriff. What's his name? In Stranger Things.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I don't remember his name.
Sheriff, but, yeah. Whatever. That's that character.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited. I am really excited to see his comedy chops. Because there will, I mean.
I think he's got plenty. I think they emerged in Stranger Things. I think he was.
Kind of came up here and there.
Yeah, he was responsible for some of the comic relief. Just not like ha-ha funny, but like the guy, I think the guy probably has good comic timing, but we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, they definitely leaned into that in the trailer. But they're really, really leaning into Demon.
Yeah.
And like hell of the Hellboy.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see kind of where they go with it. I think the character, there's a lot to explore within the character, and the worlds, but the world almost feels like it's like been done before. Mm. We've seen that world, but we haven't totally seen the character. We've seen versions of the character, but like a literal being as straightforward as a literal demon, like fighting his inner demons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what they do with it.
I think so I'm disappointed that this is a straight up reboot. It's a straight up reboot. I do believe that it's a real tragedy that Del Toro and Ron Perlman didn't have, they aren't coming back, and that we're never going to see we're never going to see Hellboy 3 from Del Toro, because I think that, and I believe that Del Toro was interested in and willing to do Hellboy 3. Yeah, it
was greenlit and then wasn't, and then came back.
Just couldn't get it off the ground.
Yeah.
The studio wouldn't give him full writer-director control, and so he just ultimately just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tragedy, because the second movie was a very, very good film that would have also been an incredibly good setup for the third movie.
Mm.
And I'm very disappointed that we will not see that movie.
Yeah.
And that's just gone. I mean, that's a franchise that is now gone. And so thankfully we have like Hellboy and Hellboy 2, but I'm not going to hold my breath about Hellboy, the Hellboy reboot. Because it's just too hard to say whether or not there's something to hope for, because the writer and director don't have a lot of film credit behind him.
Sure.
So it's a little bit of untested waters here. Like there's a high likelihood that we're going to see a lot of like generic sort of paint by number stuff.
So,
and I'm, yeah,
this genre seems to be extremely difficult.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen, so League of Extraordinary Gentlemen,
yep,
which had star power, did not work out. Van Helsing.
Oh yeah.
Star power. Disaster. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
You had, the Underworld movies.
Are popular with niche audiences, but are not good movies.
Yeah. Even like Blade steps into that realm a little bit.
Blade has like moments of greatness, but like overall is not super successful.
Yeah, and it seems, they've tried.
Probably making a lot of enemies here.
absolutely. Let me say, I love this genre. When I heard that there was this big Universal Dark... what's it? They called it something. The Dark Monster Universe or something.
Yeah, Monsters Universe, I think.
Cinematic Universe. I was incredibly excited. Dracula Untold. Did you see that movie?
I didn't. I heard it was terrible.
I heard it was terrible too. I watched it. I liked it. But I'm extremely forgiving with this genre. Right. I love this genre. And Hellboy is a little more hell than it is just straight up supernatural.
Yeah.
But I am very forgiving in this genre, because I really, really enjoy it. I will still watch Van Helsing voluntarily to this day. And so I hope that like just like above average. Don't even give me great. Yeah. Give me above average and I'll be a happy camper.
Yeah. You're
It sucks that that's the hope.
I would love for this genre to for there to be good entries in it. There are not very many. It's hard to even.
I don't know why though.
I think it's a really, really tricky tone to hit right.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the main problem, is that if you just go straight up heightened, self-serious, kind of whatever, it's probably not going to work. But if you go too comic or wacky, then it's also probably not going to work. And then there's lots. I think the problem is there's just a lot of ways to fail. There's just a lot of ways to just have it suck.
Yeah, and they've tried a bunch of stuff.
Think about who you get to write these movies, because this is the thing. Anytime you have a big studio picture, like, you're going to be like, it's essentially cast with the writer and director. Like the studio will say, we want this writer and this director because they've done X, Y, and Z. If you don't have like,
that's why Guillermo del Toro pulled this off the best,
because
he's him.
Yeah. Because he's him and he's worked in that genre so successfully.
Yeah.
And there just aren't very many of him. And so, if you're going to like, I think what maybe would be more successful is if you reach outside of the box a little bit and fill a movie's creative ranks with people who didn't necessarily
Taika Waititi.
Yeah. Bring in a fresh talent who's a very good storyteller and writer.
Yeah.
And then directors who are really, really good at just like their own style, and then let them treat that kind of material. And I think you'd wind up with something really special. Yeah. But like, that's not what we see. We see people who are saying, well, you've done that Supernatural show, so you can come in here and direct. It's like, well, I mean,
Yeah, it's definitely different. I have an itch that has not been scratched, and I was hoping with like The Mummy, and they announced Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man and all of that, and it fell so flat, and I'm so bummed about it. But who knows? Maybe Hellboy is brilliant, and it kicks off a whole new genre of excellence in this genre.
But
if you will,
if you set your expectations there,
that's
then
true.
You have no one but yourself to blame when you are sorely disappointed.
I am expecting and hoping a mediocre movie that coasts on the charm of David Arbor.
Yeah, I think that's actually a reasonable expectation.
Yeah. So we'll see.
All right. I think we are finished with our off-the-shelf episode about Hellboy and Hellboy 2.
Yes.
And Hellboy.
Yes.
Well, no, we're not finished with that episode.
No, we'll go back to that.
But okay. So what are we talking about next week? Or not next week, later this week.
Later this week.
On Friday, we'll be back with, say it. Say it, CJ.
I'm so lost in our schedule.
It's us.
Oh no.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to watch this very frightening movie with you. But you've seen Get Out, right?
I have seen Get Out.
And you enjoy Get Out.
I loved Get Out.
You're going to have a good time.
This looks a whole lot creepier than Get Out. A whole lot creepier. I did find out today, though, who Jordan Peele was married to.
I forget. Who is it?
It's Gina Linetti from freaking Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Chelsea Peretti.
Oh, I did not realize that.
They're married.
Wow.
It's like the weirdest combo in my mind. But it's really cool.
I have a feeling that she is nothing like her character in real life.
That's my thought. I am excited to see us because of Jordan Peele.
He's a very good director.
He's a very good director, very good writer. Get Out was
an incredibly good movie.
I think my favorite movie of that year.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm excited about it, but like I don't like it, Jordan. I don't like the feeling of being scared. I don't understand. It makes no sense to
CJ,
me whatsoever.
I'm excited to watch you become a man. And feel scared like the rest of us men.
Was Grudge 2. Oh. That's how long it's been.
Wow.
I'm terrified.
Wow.
It's fine. It'll be good. You're welcome, listeners.
It'll be fun. All right. If you have off-the-shelf episode suggestions, leave them in an email at cj@realcontender.com.
That's the one.
Or post it on Facebook or leave a review.
Definitely leave a review.
Always leave a review. And once again, please subscribe too.
Yes.
That's for you. That's for your benefit.
Yeah. Review for us.
Subscribe for you.
Subscribe for you.
Ooh, I love that.
should we make that
forever.
A regular?
Yes.
And then to one of the old reliables, thank you, Michael Baumiller, for the music.
Thank you, Michael Baumiller, for the music.
And
remember to collect movies like a nerd and rewatch them like a critic.
And cut.